You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Everyone knows, instinctively, everyone knows there are problems with this election. I mean, the fact he said, 75 million people, he increased his vote total by 10 to 11 million. We won 27 out of the 27 toss-up states. He increased his votes with Hispanic Americans, African Americans, state legislatures that Republicans controlled. We kept all those plus increased those numbers. You can just go down the line. He won 19 of the 20 bellwether counties. He won Ohio by 8, Iowa by 8, Florida by 3, and yet somehow doesn't win.
The words of Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio, insisting that President Trump should not concede. This is December 9th, 2020. Now, when Congressman Jordan makes that remark, he's basing it upon the numbers he just cited. And there have been a lot of questions. How can the Republicans flip all the House seats that they won, the Democrats losing so many, and everyone down the Republican list wins but Trump? Well, of course, yesterday, the Supreme Court rejected the suit challenging Pennsylvania. But we have, of course, the Texas case in play now, where Texas has stepped forward, suing and taking it direct to the U.S. Supreme Court, the electoral votes of Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And President Trump says this could be the big one. This is the big one. Our country needs a victory. You think that's going to turn out to be that way? Or maybe you hope. Or maybe you're already thinking, what a waste of time again. Trump's been defeated several times already by every one of these. He should just give it up, roll over, and say goodbye, turn out the lights. We're going to be joined a little bit later by Hans von Spakovsky, an expert in constitutional law. Because this Texas suit, as I was telling you yesterday when the word first broke on it, is going to be probably and is at this point the biggest hammer they've tried to use in this case. It goes direct to the U.S. Supreme Court because under the Constitution, when states challenge or have an issue with another state, they get an immediate appearance before the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court decides to accept the case. Now, yesterday, the last word was the Supreme Court had told the states being challenged by Texas, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, to prepare an answer today. Today. And overnight, more states, including Missouri, stepped up and said, we support the Texas lawsuit. The basic claim is, according to the Attorney General of Texas, these elections in other states where state law was not followed affects the votes of Texas citizens because they voted properly, they voted for their candidate, and in these states, they changed things as they were in play. We're going to get into that in much more detail over the next 2 hours. Also, we have a California Congressman, Swalwell, wrapped up in a China spy scandal. He's on the House Intel Committee. Big questions about should he remain? How did it happen? What's a real story? And Swalwell does not want to discuss his personal relationship with the Chinese spy, a woman. And, of course, General Flynn getting a pardon from President Trump, giving his first full interview, gave it to Fox Maria Bartiromo. He says, don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for President Trump and the presidency. You're going to get to hear parts of that interview coming up. And more violence in Portland. So how is that defunding police working out for you? The mayor's still trying to talk tough. He's trying. He said, we're not going to have any occupied zones like that in Seattle. We're not going to do that in Portland. Although for months, if you recall, while protesters were in the streets night after night attacking the federal courthouse, he didn't really do anything. Now he's trying to talk tough. You think it really means anything to them? In the meantime, the police chief says these protesters are heavily armed. This could get extremely dangerous. We'll bring you up to speed on that. And there's the story we had yesterday about the little boy, 4 years old, goes to Santa at a mall and says, I would like a Nerf gun. And Santa, no gun. Not going to give you any gun. No. And Mama says, it's a Nerf gun. Santa says, no, I'm not taking any gun to any kid's house. There's an update on that story, and you're going to like it. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand, and Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
And we're down, we go, go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
They tried to stop President Trump from winning the election. He won. Then priority number one becomes, how do we cover up what we did? And they had to focus on getting rid of Michael Flynn. Obama, Biden, Comey, Yates, Rice, all in that meeting, they plot and strategize how they're going to take down Michael Flynn, because they had to. Because Michael Flynn, as former defense intelligence and now as the incoming national security advisor to President Trump, was going to figure out what they did.
That is, again, Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio, talking about why a plot was hatched to go after Michael Flynn in the beginning days of the Trump administration. And, of course, at the time, there was a lot of things not known. The FBI was claiming that Flynn had committed perjury. But then later on, as we move farther down the line, eventually some of the agents who were sent over there admit, first of all, we did not follow proper procedure. Even at that time, FBI Director Comey later admitted, yeah, they should not have done it the way they did. Flynn, they just went over to have, quote, a conversation with him, kind of, you know, spitball a few things. He didn't know he was under investigation for anything. He was, quote, under investigation because they had heard that he had talked to one of his Russian counterparts in advance of Trump being inaugurated, and they were going to cite the Logan Act against him, that he was representing the United States when he really couldn't and was in violation. The Logan Act is something that's of archaic means, never has been used effectively, not used at all in many cases when you get down to it, but the bottom line was, they thought this is something we can begin to spear Trump with. And, of course, the idea was to put pressure on Flynn to make him turn against President Trump, who had just nominated him, or rather put him in position as a national security advisor. And then the case began to move forward. And, of course, for all of us who have to watch it from a distance, What do we have to rely on? Not facts. We had to rely on comments and statements from both sides. But the mainstream media was doing an excellent job of carrying the water for the leftists. They never raised any serious questions. They didn't do that even later when more information began to come out. They were complicit all the way. But President Trump recognized what was at play. And in fact, President Trump, in one interview in May, began to kind of give an idea of what he was seeing happen and also how he would describe Flynn. And also Congressman Nunes, Republican, California, on the House Oversight Committee, also acknowledged that Flynn has been wrong. Something's wrong here.
And I'll tell you, General Flynn and others are heroes. Heroes, because what's happened to them, they weren't after General Flynn. They wanted him to lie about me, make up a story.
If I was in General Flynn's shoes right now, I'd be furious. The Republican Party has to prioritize this, that these guys are prosecuted and held accountable. Remember, all of these witch hunters on the Mueller team knew the day they walked in the door that there was no evidence of collusion. So what they were doing is they set an obstruction of justice trap.
That's exactly what they did. They set up a trap. Now, again, that was Trump this last May and Nunes back in September this year, talking once everything became evident. And, of course, Trump has since given a full pardon to Flynn. We did not know of a meeting that was taking place in the Oval Office. And they sure were not going to offer knowledge of that. We only got that information because outgoing National Security Advisor Susan Rice sent herself an email. Then later that email was fully declassified. And, of course, while we've had Comey insisting while he was the FBI director, you know, that he was doing everything as he should, nothing was wrong. And they had this little meeting in the White House, the Oval Office, in advance of an intel briefing about Russian interference and alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election. Everything was in place for them to begin this plot. Her email, as I said, describes a January 5, 2017 Oval Office meeting. Attending, Susan Rice, who was Flynn's predecessor in the job. Of course, she was with the Obama administration. But they were going out. Trump was coming in. Also present at that meeting, let me remind you, Vice President Joe Biden, who has sometimes said, I don't remember anything like that. Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, again, don't count on his memory. Sally Yates, who was acting attorney general at the time, was at the meeting, and she was kind of caught off guard. She didn't know this was going on. And it also included then-President Barack Obama. The email that Susan Rice wrote said that Obama wanted to be sure, quote, every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. And her email said, Susan Rice, the president stressed he's not asking about, initiating, or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. And Comey, according to Susan Rice, affirmed we are proceeding by the book as it relates to law enforcement. But Comey said, I do have some concerns that the incoming National Security Advisor Flynn is speaking frequently with the Russian ambassador, sharing sensitive information. President Obama asked if Comey was saying that the NSC should not pass sensitive information related to Russia to Flynn. In other words, should our own government begin to hold information, withhold it, from Trump's new National Security Advisor? And Comey replied, potentially. But indicate I have no information. Now, he has passed anything. But the level of communication is unusual. It's not unusual at all. And, in fact, it's already happened again as Biden is trying to come in. They've already been reaching out to leaders across the world. Biden even acknowledged it. Not just they were calling to congratulate him, but saying, we began to talk about things we can do. You're not even representing the U.S. at this point. You are not the president. You're president-elect at the best, and you're doing the same thing you accused Flynn of doing. Flynn, on the interview with Maria Bartiromo, giving his first extensive interview, kind of described how he saw the plot.
Well, first of all, we all know that this was an effort to get Flynn to get Trump. And that's been made very clear by one particular senior FBI agent who has now, you know, put into an affidavit, which is a good word to use right now. And that statement that he made was outrageous. The other thing that, you know, the 2016 campaign, 2016 transition, and then into the White House, this entire effort, and when people say, hey, Mike, I'm sorry for what happened to you, what I tell people is don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for this president. Feel sorry for the presidency of this country and be outraged at what they tried to do to this country.
And that is a big key point, because what they were doing at that point, that was the beginning of the Russian collusion, the whole investigation, roll it out, do what we can with it. And Obama was deeply involved in knowing what was going on with Flynn. Now, Susan Rice made all these comments, wrote this email to herself, and you know why? It's that typical CYA. Cover your arse, because this is blockbuster-type material. And only after we went through the entire, quote, Mueller Russian investigation, did we begin to get some idea of what was really going on. It was a plot from the beginning, because they did not think Trump should have won. So when you hear them now beating their chest and say, you should give up, you should concede, we gave up, we concede. No, you did not. You did not, and you don't have the right to stand on high moral ground claiming that you did everything right. You were trying at that point to overthrow the government, to overthrow the elected president by coming up with all these little plots and whatever we could find that we could sharpen and use against him. Kind of like inmates in a prison. If I can get me a spoon, I can sharpen it into a shiv. They were looking for anything they could. And the first target, Flynn, National Security Advisor, because they knew he'd been talking to the Russian ambassador. And what he was saying, look, I know you're upset with some things that are going on, and you're maybe planning some event. Wait till we get in. Will you give us a chance to get in so we can start working on things, get a handle on things? Would you just do that? He was not giving any secrets away. He's just saying, we will try to work with you, so don't do anything. Let us come in and start that way. That's exactly what we're seeing now, is that Biden is coming in, or trying to, telling China and others, so just don't go off, don't go flying off the handle. Just give us a chance to work with you. And China is more than willing to work with Biden. And there's a real problem that's going to surface on that now and going forward. And Michael Flynn, in this interview he gave the other day, he points out something that we could certainly assume, based on how we saw members of the FBI and the Department of Justice act throughout this entire event, between Comey, then McCabe, and Agent Smurf, Stroke, and his lover, Lisa Page, and other members of the DOJ, how they were basically no longer being principled, ethical, unbiased investigators. They were putting together a plot. Here's the way retired General Flynn describes it.
We have an element in our country, some of which is in the institutions of our government, the Department of Justice, certainly the FBI, and other elements like the intelligence community that just basically are, I mean, and I think most Americans would agree, or many Americans would agree, that there's an anti-American bent inside of some of these institutions.
I'd agree fully with him, and I think many of you would. And that's, actually, I'll say it is shocking. It shouldn't be that way. But then again, it's not that you aren't, that you're not shocked. I mean, you believe your child is always honest with you. And they're standing there with chocolate chips around the corner of the mouth and on their hands. And you believe they're always honest with you. You want to believe that. But the evidence of the chocolate chips on their face and their hands shows, no, they did get into the cookie jar. It wasn't the brother. And you want to believe that's not the way it happens. We want to believe the FBI and the DOJ, other members of our intel community, are here to serve us and do it properly and ethically and by the law and by the Constitution. But General Flynn said, and I do agree, there is an anti-American sense inside some of these institutions. Anti-American. And everyone who serves as either an agent or some high position is taking an oath to protect and serve this country. And then, of course, Obama had made it clear he did not support Flynn when he met with President-elect Donald Trump. Maria decided, I want to ask General Flynn about his reaction to Obama's attitude at that point and going forward. You want to hear the answer coming up.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Why was President Obama so afraid of you? You wanted to audit the Pentagon, didn't you? Tell me what you wanted to do when you were in the Obama administration to alienate some of those colleagues of yours.
Yeah, so imagine the transition of the entire country, the United States of America, and here you have this sort of transition conversation between two incoming and an outgoing president, and they mentioned two people, dear leader Kim Jong-un, and General Michael Flynn, as though I'm public enemy number one. So, yeah, you know, one of these days I would like somebody to pin him down and ask him. And he should have been afraid of me, and he still should be afraid of me. Obama talking about me is outrageous. I will not give him any more time on your show. So thank you for asking that question.
That's the response of retired General Flynn when Maria said, well, what do you think about Obama talking about you at that time? And he's correct, because as President-elect Trump met Obama in the White House, in the Oval Office, November 10, 2 days after Trump's election victory, before the inauguration, Obama made it clear, according to White House spokesman Sean Spicer in a news briefing later, that Obama made it known he's not exactly a fan of General Flynn. And so they started looking for a way to get rid of Flynn. And Flynn said, why am I put in the same category as a North Korean leader that I'm an enemy of the country? Obama needs to answer that at some point. But otherwise, I don't want to give him any more airtime, basically. No one has asked Obama in more detail about that. But we already know now. Despite any denials or any sidesteps he might try, we also know that on January 5, as I said, 2017, Obama presided over a meeting in the Oval Office for an intel briefing about Russian interference, as they were calling it, in the 2016 election. Target Trump and target Flynn, anyone else they could throw in there. The attendees including then-President Obama, FBI Director then Comey, Sally Yates, Acting Attorney General, Susan Rice, who was Flynn's predecessor in the job, and then VP Joe Biden. And there was talk that, well, you know, Flynn has been talking to a Russian ambassador and seems to be doing something wrong. We should maybe we can use that against him. And that's what they did. But again, the target really wasn't Flynn. It was Trump. And then, of course, we embark on that two-plus-year investigation, which yielded nothing. And to this day, many Democrats insist that Trump is tied to Russia. Well, to this day, I'd like some of the Democrats and the mainstream media to start asking questions about Congressman Swalwell of California and his ties to China. Swalwell's on the Intel Committee. You don't get on that committee unless Nancy Pelosi gives a green light. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. You do not want to miss it because there are some tough questions that need to be asked. And Swalwell is just kind of, he's trying to blame Trump. He's trying to blame Trump for any connections he had with China. Not me, the brother did it. You know that story. All right, stand by. We got Hans von Pakoski coming up. We're going to talk about this Texas lawsuit in front of the Supreme Court challenging the presidential election. How it got there, where it stands, what could happen next. Stand by, please.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, for those of you listening yesterday, I told you when the word broke of the state of Texas filing a lawsuit just before midnight Monday, going direct to the Supreme Court under Article 3 of the Constitution, because they can have original jurisdiction, controversies between two or more states. I said this could be a very, very big case. And numerous other states have now joined. And it's not a matter of counting ballots. It's not a matter of was there fraud in the actual ballot or signature. It's a matter of where other voters across the nation basically cheated out of their vote. If legislatures in some of these states being challenged violate the Constitution. I told you then we need an expert to really give you details, and I've got one. Hans von Pakoski of the Heritage Foundation. Glad to have you on board, sir.
Larry, thanks for having me on.
So give us a rundown on what – now, the other day, the Pennsylvania case got thrown out. All the other cases been thrown out, and we keep hearing this is just another blowing in the wind. It doesn't mean anything. But this stands out different than any of the others on what basis?
Well, it's really a well-written complaint, and it's a state, an actual state suing, not just disgruntled campaigns and nonprofit organizations. So – the Supreme Court always takes it very seriously when states appear before it. And what Texas is saying is basically this. They go through in great detail to summarize the changes that were made in the four states that they are suing, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Georgia, not by the state legislature, but by executive branch officials within the state government and state courts. And they give examples of all of those changes and then point out that all of those changes were unconstitutional because those executive branch officials, like the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania, they were overriding the rules set for the election by the state legislatures. And the reason that's unconstitutional is because the U.S. Constitution, what's called the Electors Clause, gives the power and authority to state legislatures to set the rules for presidential elections, not state governments in general. And what Texas is saying is that all of these changes affected so many votes that it changed the outcome of the 2020 election and therefore damaged Texas and other states who actually followed and abided by the constitutional rules on elections.
All right, there are a lot of trails I want to go down, but first, the Supreme Court has basically told Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia to reply, I think, by 3 o'clock tomorrow.
Right.
I assume that's Eastern time. So they do want to see some kind of response. Does that, by the fact that they're asking for a response, does that indicate they will hear the case or what?
No, because the rule is that while the Supreme Court has, as you said, original jurisdiction over disputes between the states, there's actually a federal statute and a rule of the Supreme Court itself that says that no such complaint or lawsuit can be filed by a state against another state without first getting the permission of the Supreme Court. And that's actually what Texas filed late on Monday. They filed a motion asking for permission to file this lawsuit against those four states. So those states all will they'll come in tomorrow and they will try to convince the court you shouldn't give permission for this lawsuit to go forward. And the key decision we'll all be waiting for is, does the Supreme Court do what Texas wants it to do, let it file this lawsuit against these four states?
Well, let's again break that down. Now, first of all, if it's in the Constitution, was it Article 25, that states set their own elections, legislatures, I should say, is that correct?
It's in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2.
All right. So it specifically says the legislatures must do this. It cannot be a state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, which is all Democrat.
Right.
It cannot be electors. It cannot be election boards. It must be the state. And they were changing it rapidly, using the excuse of COVID, we got to redo everything to get ready, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And like I said, the complaint, which was attached as an exhibit to the motion, it goes into, it's really, really well written. They go into great detail about the specific changes made in every single state that shouldn't have been made and were basically overriding what the state legislatures had done.
If it's that clean and clear, how would the Supreme Court refuse to even hear it?
Well, keep in mind that there's a difference between the legal merit of a case and the potential political consequences and controversies. And, you know, I have no doubt that the court may be very reluctant to take on a case, no matter what the merits are, that potentially could overturn a presidential election. Because, look, if you get to the end of the lawsuit, what Texas is asking for is a very big ask. They're asking for a declaratory judgment from the Supreme Court saying that the administration of the election by these four states violated the Constitution and that, therefore, their electoral college vote should not be counted. And, in fact, the Supreme Court should order for the states to conduct new special elections.
Well, I thought part of it was also that they want the legislatures in each state to select the electoral college instead of the voters, and those are Republican-controlled in each of those states.
That is the alternate remedy. They also say that if the states have already basically certified their elections and appointed their presidential elections, then Texas wants the court to direct the legislatures to appoint a new set of presidential electors in a manner that doesn't violate the Constitution.
The other issue, of course, is a time frame. I mean, we have the Electoral College scheduled to meet December 14th. Now, we just passed yesterday the so-called safe harbor deadline. What does that mean in reference to this case and reference to the timeline coming December 14th?
Well, the safe harbor is based on this federal statute that basically says that if states get their elections certified and certify who the electors will be for that state by yesterday, then their choice of electors can't be contested by Congress and others. But look, that's a federal statute. It can't necessarily override the Constitution. And there's nothing in the Constitution that says that the Supreme Court can't find a problem and declare that a state somehow did something wrong that brings into question its certification of electors.
All right, let me get down to a very nitty-gritty and see if you want to help me weigh this out a little bit and using your expertise and everything. You said, and I understand, the Supreme Court might be reluctant to get involved in something like this because it's so political and would change an election. But if it were fraudulently obtained, if the candidate that won did it by numerous instances of fraud in various levels, they still want – I mean, they're involved politically one way or the other, the Supreme Court at this point.
Well, look, I agree with you, and I actually think they should take the case because, look, you don't even have to argue about fraud because the real issue in the case that Texas is bringing up is
– constitutional.
They're not questioning and saying all this fraud occurred. What they're saying is that all of these states violated the Constitution in their changing of the rules, and the number of votes that were received because of that change of the rules were enough to change the results of the election.
So what they will tomorrow, these states that have been named will have to give their answer.
Right.
And then what would be the next play again with December 14th looming?
I think we will get the deadline is 3 o'clock Thursday for the states, the poor states to file a response to the Supreme Court. Friday is when the court will have its private internal meeting to discuss cases and potential cases that people want them to take. And I suspect they'll make a decision on Friday as to whether or not they will take this case, and we will hear. I would assume we would hear by sometime this weekend, if not by the end of the day Friday.
And in the last 30 seconds, they would have to expedite any hearing and ruling, right? I mean, they can't drag it out.
No. In fact, I would suspect that if they were to take the case, they'd probably schedule oral arguments for the case on Monday.
All right. Hans, I thank you very much for your time. We certainly rely upon you for giving us a full understanding of our Constitution, especially in this. This is a very wicked little trail we're following here. But I thank you for helping us figure it out, sir.
Sure thing. Okay.
You bet. We'll do it again. Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. So as you heard him say, he would expect by sometime Friday, over the weekend anyway, we will hear if the Supreme Court is going to go ahead and actually hear the case as presented by Texas. And again, Texas is challenging the constitutionality of these states and what they did in violation of the U.S. Constitution. Not challenging the actual votes or how they were done or counted, just the Constitution issue. Supreme Court should hear that. We'll see. Now we'll turn our attention to Portland and the violence escalating again. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Right now, a standoff in the streets of North Portland as a group protesting an eviction face off with police in the middle of a neighborhood, building barricades and blocking roads. This is a live look right now near that home on Mississippi Avenue. You see the barricades off in the distance there. Good evening. Thanks for being with us, everybody. I'm Steve Dunn.
And I'm Deborah Knapp. The story has been unfolding all day. Police say people at what's known as the Red House have been trespassing on that property. Officers tried to move in earlier today to help with the eviction, and this was the result.
That's a report from KATU TV in Portland on what was supposed to be an eviction proceeding and has escalated to a major protest, an occupation, an occupied zone. Even Portland Mayor Wheeler, known for being a big lefty, is saying this is wrong. The occupation must end. There are many ways to do this, but illegally occupying private property, openly carrying weapons, threatening and intimidating people are not among them. They don't care. They're going to do what they want to. And so the police are having to deal with it. Now, a real quick summary of this thing. The house had been owned by the family that lives there, and they paid off the loan. They'd owned it since the 50s. They'd paid off the mortgage. But then in 2002, a family member was arrested, so they used a loan against the house to get the bail, I guess, for the family member out. They never paid it back, and so now the company is foreclosing and wants them out. They want possession of the property, as it was put up as collateral. Since September, this has been going on. And since September, individuals have been on that home's front and backyards and also camping on adjacent privately owned and city-owned areas. Neighbors bordering the property have been boarding up their homes, erecting fencing around their own properties. They're concerned about, quote, threatening behavior and intimidation they've experienced. That's according to the Portland Police Bureau. And the Portland Police Chief said earlier today, I'm greatly concerned because we know individuals have stockpiled weapons, assigned armed guards, spray-painted threats to kill police officers at the so-called Red House on Mississippi Avenue. Now, the activists apparently have called for a press conference they're going to hold at 3 o'clock Pacific time later today, or 2 o'clock, I should say, Pacific time, at the Red House on Mississippi, as it's being known. The demonstrators, once they moved in and started doing this, they have had round-the-clock community presence, on-site camping, a fully functional kitchen offering two free hot meals a day, free programming centering in healing and abolition, things of this nature. They've been doing in the house and outside the house on the property. They're claiming this is being stolen from the owners, and so we're here to protect them. And they have permission to camp on the land around the house by the owners, but police moved in the other day to try to force everyone out, and that's when it escalated again. Police brought in barricades to kind of keep everybody away. Well, they took the barricades and used them against police. Again, this all began with a court order back in September, so it's been going on. It just keeps escalating. And last night was an indication again that it's not going to end easily and peacefully and may end with some real serious harm, injuries, or more. But the problem they have up in that area, it's not the police having to deal with it, it's the fact that politicians have been so lenient in the past and basically given green lights and permission for these kinds of things to go and escalate. And they didn't want to do anything. You remember all those nights at the protesters were trying to burn down the federal courthouse in Portland. President Trump ended up sending in additional marshals to help protect it. Eventually, the Oregon State Police came in to help out a little bit. And remember in Seattle last summer when they took over an area and were calling an occupied zone? And the politicians just kind of go along with it. They go along with defunding police. Always bowing down to the pressure groups, not standing up for what's right or trying to deal with them in a different way. They just give in. When you begin to concede like that over and over again, do you really think that when you take a stand that they're really going to believe that you mean it? I'm reading this quote from the Portland, Oregon Mayor Wheeler. There are many ways to protest and work toward reform. They know that, but they're not interested. He said, it's time for the occupation to end. Well, they say, we're not occupying. We're doing what we want to. And as I said, in that neighborhood, in the neighborhood that's surrounded, these people are now being held hostage in their own homes, trying to get in and out of the area safely, worried about something going wrong and them suddenly being pulled into it. Welcome to the attitude of the leftists that want to just give, and call everything out. And this is just a beginning. We'll take a break, and when we come back in the next hour, you don't want to miss it. We're going to get into a little bit more detail from the Attorney General of Texas on his view of this battle they've challenged in the Supreme Court on the election. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.